morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is the December 20th, 2022 Chatham County Zoning Board of Appeals hearing. My name is James Corsi. I'm the chairman of this board. For all who are in attendance, this is a quasi judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings this morning will please sign in if they haven't already. Witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony, and all proceedings of this board meeting are being recorded. Also, be aware that decisions of this Board of Appeals are final. Challenges to these decisions of this Zoning Board of Appeals must be filed in the Superior Court of Chatham County. All right. May we stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'd like to publicly welcome two new board members. This will be their first meeting, and we'll call them the newbies this morning. Ms. Ashley Field, to my left. Good morning, Ashley, and welcome. And also Mr. Kiwan Drayton. Good morning, and welcome to you as well. Did I pronounce your name correctly? Kiwan. Okay, very good. And if I make that mistake again, just slap
me. Kiwan.
Kiwan. Yes. That's right. Very good. All right. Staff, do we have any other proclamations or acknowledgments or notices that need to be discussed before we get started? All right. Has everyone had a chance to review the October 25th, 22 meeting minutes? But before I get to that, we're missing two people. Let me call the roll real quick. James Corsi, chairman, is present. Corden Ross, not present. Meredith Stone, she's not here this morning. Okay. Mr. Vineyard.
Here.
Mr. Pelote.
Present.
Ms. Field.
Present.
And Mr. Drayton.
Present.
All right. We have a total of 5 of 7, so we have a quorum, and we may proceed this morning. Back to our minutes. Has everyone had an opportunity to review those minutes? Does anyone have any comments or edits or that need to be made to those minutes?
Mr. Chairman, hearing none, move the minutes be approved.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Voice vote, please. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The October 25th, 22 meeting minutes are therefore approved. I see on our agenda that there is a request to withdraw one matter involving 2 Marsh Island Lane. Staff, is that correct? Okay, then I will. That's not ripe, or are they just simply withdrawing it completely? Okay, very good. Then, hearing that, do I hear a motion to withdraw that from the agenda? Second?
Second.
Voice vote, all in favor of withdrawing this matter from the agenda.
Aye.
Very good. All opposed? Hearing none, that matter is withdrawn. Any old business this morning, staff?
No.
Okay, then we get to the regular agenda matter. First matter on the agenda is 5700 Ogeechee Road, variance to the maximum height restrictions. May we hear from staff, please, on this matter?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. Melissa Leto, BC staff.
Please introduce yourself a little louder, please.
This is Melissa Leto, MPC staff.
Okay, thank you.
Nice to meet you, new chairman, new board members as well. Yeah. All right, so the applicant is requesting two variances this morning for a proposed multifamily residential development consisting of two three-story buildings and three-story buildings and three four-story buildings at 5700 Ogeechee Road. The requested variances are the following. Let me show you their site plan, proposed site plan. So the ones on the, these three buildings here are being proposed as four stories. They're going to be 57, 8 and 6 inches. And then the two buildings to the left are proposed to be three stories with 47 feet, 6 inches in height. Whereas in the county code of ordinances, the maximum height is 36 feet. So the reduction is actually the three-story buildings are requesting 11 feet and 6 inches in height variance. And the three four-story buildings are requesting a 22 feet and 6 inches in height variance. Under the current zoning regulations, the maximum height permitted in the district is 36 feet. For the purpose of a multifamily building, the height could accommodate three stories, but would likely result in a flat or very low-pitched roof. It could not, however, accommodate a four-story building at all. And let me show you a rendering of what they're proposing. So the petitioner's proposed buildings do not exceed four stories in height. While a variance would allow additional height, it would also decrease the footprint of the structure and allow for greater architectural flexibility specific to ceiling heights and roof pitch. Again, per building code regulations, buildings exceeding three stories require elevators. Show you an aerial context. The subject property consists of one existing undeveloped parcel, approximately 11.10 acres in size. The parcel is on the northwest side of Ogeechee Road between Cottonvale Road and Berwick Boulevard. The zoning classification is planned unit development community, as it is part of the Berwick Master Plan, which was approved in 2000. A mixed-use plan development in West Chatham County, the master plan includes land use designations, but does not include height regulations, and that's why we're here today. The development pattern adjacent to the subject property includes a car wash facility, a shopping center with a grocery store, detached single-family residential housing, and an undeveloped parcel proposed for multifamily residential use. To the right here would be the future multifamily condos. The applicant's proposal includes multifamily residential buildings, an amenity building, as well as outdoor space for the common use of the residents. The height variance request is in part driven by the building design having a pitched roof. There will be a combination of three and four story buildings. These number of stories cannot be achieved with a flat roof design. The density for the property is 24 units per acre. The petitioner is proposing up to 180 units. Show you. Dimensionally, the property is different from other properties in the vicinity. The shape would show that. The site layout is driven significantly by the unorthodox shape, which is unlike more conventional parcel geometry in the area. The current regulations for height are also under review by MPC staff. They limit architectural creativity for three-story and taller buildings. A variance to the regulations in this case is not likely to impair the intent of the zoning ordinance if building placement is such that it does not impact adjacent residential properties. Relative to potential detriment, staff finds that the requested variances are not likely to be detrimental because the Berwick Plan development accounted for a mix of housing types and the subject parcel is identified as a multifamily use. And as well, there will be about 174 feet of a distance between the closest four-story building to the properties, the rear buildings that are in the subdivision across from the canal. Based on the findings identified in the staff report, staff recommends approval of the height variances requested. This would show you, these are the closest properties right now that are affected by, that would be affected by the four-story buildings. And then this measurement here includes to the rear of the building and to the rear of the proposed building, four-story building, would be 174 feet distance of a buffer. All right, the petitioner Josh Yellen is here, as well as I staff, to answer any questions. Thank you.
You done?
Yes. All right.
Now, I understand that staff has been looking at this height requirement under the ordinance for some time. Can you give me some indication of where we are in that process?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've been in discussions with the county management as it relates to some improvements to the county ordinance. It includes that. The I think the change in leadership at the county held that time frame back some. So I think in the first quarter of 2023, we'll be revisiting that with Chatham County.
All right. Can you give me some perspective of why the limitations have been at the present level for so many years?
In terms of the height requirement, yes. The height maximum? Well, when the height maximum was originally established, when the county ordinance was written, 36 feet was not out of the ordinary for a multifamily building. That was fairly common, and it was, buildings could be built within that height. A lot of the designs at that time, because I think we're going back to the 60s, and a lot of multifamily that got built in the 80s primarily, some two stories, some up to three stories, but current designs, even in three stories, are typically taller than 36 feet. The other issue was that back then, it was really more so driven by fire protection, because buildings taller than that were an issue from a fire protection standpoint. That's no longer an issue. So we feel like those changes can be brought forth now to both accommodate more current design trends, as well as the lack of an issue with fire protection. Also, in the multifamily world, it seems to be more common to build four-story buildings when before it wasn't, because it was so cost prohibitive because of elevators. That cost has come down dramatically. So a lot of multifamily developers are building four-story buildings where they didn't before due to costs.
Now, I also seem to recall from my foggy memory that this issue has come before this board before. And I believe we have granted variances for four-story buildings before.
There have been height variances granted in this corridor for four-story buildings in the past. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of staff before we get started? No one?
And most of these older apartments were 8-foot ceilings and flat roofs, and now they're building apartments with higher ceilings, and of course, flat roofs are sort of out. And I mean, the chairman has already brought up, we have deviated from the norm by doing this before, much to my chagrin, but because I don't like to do it, but we have done it, and I've been on the board and voted for it. So I understand. Thank you.
But at the same time, I'm also comforted by the fact that you are reviewing this matter in anticipation of hopefully changing the ordinance, height ordinances in the future. All right. Who is here to speak for the petitioner?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Josh Yellen here today on behalf of the petitioner, Olympus Ventures. We have with me as well to answer questions, Ms. Della Culpin, and she's the managing director of real estate for Olympus Ventures. And so the proposed applicant here for the property at 5700 Ogeechee, we are proposing to do a multifamily apartment development in this area. We would like to thank staff for the staff report and for the recommendation of approval for the variance request. Do want to reiterate some of the points that were just recently mentioned, that yes, there is the 36-foot cap currently in the ordinance, but that is the result of what we believe is some antiquated standards that have been addressed through modern technology and then enhanced fire systems, along with better engines and capabilities. We do want to make the point that today's request for the height variance has nothing to do with the density of the project. The project is 180 units, whether it's three stories, four stories, five stories, six stories. We're only seeking to go up to four stories, but the need for this variance is for primarily three reasons. As Mr. Vineyard mentioned, one, 9-foot ceiling heights. In order to have a well-designed and a property that can be rented to new tenants, 9-foot ceilings is the norm. People don't want to live in 8-foot cramped ceilings. The second, and as it's becoming almost more important in the kind of post-COVID world, is outdoor green space. By going higher, we can reduce our building footprint and provide more amenities for the tenants of the building. As currently proposed, we're looking at 45% of the land to be reserved as open space for this project. The last issue with regards to the height variance is creating a pitched roof so that it can actually look and feel like a residential, more suburban project, whereas a flat roof would probably be out of keeping with the area. It would feel too downtown, too urban of a development. So the pitched roof from an architectural and design standpoint gives it a more homely and livable feel. And so for those three reasons, we are requesting this variance. This variance, as was mentioned, has been approved recently along Highway 17, along Ogeechee. In fact, this board approved two similar variances last year, one in 2017. So it's a common variance because everyone knows that the modern reality of apartment design includes these higher ceilings, includes increased green space, and includes making the communities a little bit more livable and feeling. And so we do appreciate staff's recommendation for approval, and we do respectfully request that you approve of this variance. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Yellen? Mr. Yellen, is there anything particularly different about this footprint or this site that would call for a height variance like this?
So in terms of the actual layout of the site, what is unique and particular to this site is this building right here is actually not part of our development. I want to say it's a dialysis center that is here. Additionally, this property line is at an angle with a detention pond that services both properties. So in terms of the layout, we obviously don't have four corners here. And so we are trying to accommodate the unique geometry of this site as well. And that orientation, they've actually done an incredibly good job, in my opinion, of planning this development for the multifamily by pushing the four-story buildings as far away as possible from the townhome development that is adjacent to the site, so that there is in fact an almost 175-foot distance between these proposed buildings and the nearest residential development. And so they are trying to fit this in a way that both fits with the shape of the site, but also in a way that is respective of the neighboring properties.
Thank you. Do you wish to present anyone on behalf of your client this morning?
No, thank you.
All right. Any questions this morning? Is there anyone on the phone? No? We have no opposition, I take it. Yes, ma'am? One speaker. Okay. Very good. May I have your name, please?
My name is Marilyn Curtis. I am a current resident of Travertine Circle, which is part of the Stone Lake subdivision that will be affected by these apartments.
All right. Would you raise your right hand, please, ma'am? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you, ma'am. If you would like to go ahead, please.
The reason I'm here is we had received the letter, and there was a little bit of confusion on looking at the site map. It was just a printed version. And in surveying some of my neighbors, some are out of town because of the Christmas holiday, and others thought, well, it doesn't pertain to us. It's on Ogeechee Road. So there was a little bit of concern, not thinking it's going to be directly behind us just because of the address. So I just want to make that one statement. The reason I'm opposing the height variance is that we in our neighborhood consist of one story and two story buildings. Those buildings are all have basically the same roof line. Part of our HOA maintains those roofs. And in looking at three stories, it's going to be looking down upon our townhouses. And even though there is a distance in between, and I just sort of feel like this is like David and Goliath as far as the appearance. So four stories seems very extreme. I think it will affect my biggest concern. It's going to affect our quality of being able the traffic and the density within the neighborhood. And so those are my big concerns. I have a one story house, and it will be pretty much swamped.
May I stop you for just a second? Can staff pull up the aerial on this property again?
This one good?
The Google Map or air satellite photo.
Oh, I have an aerial in my, okay.
There you go. That's
okay,
the one.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Ms. Curtis, can you see the aerial up above you?
It's on the screen.
On the screen?
Yes.
The subdivision that you live in is directly behind?
Is directly behind, yes. Okay. It's Stone Lake Townhouse Subdivision, established in 2003 through 2005.
Okay. And to get my...
We have an HOA, and it consists of a varied group of people.
All right.
Oh, is your house right in here?
Right.
To get my bearings.
All of these are part of the subdivision, all of these houses right here. This is what's affected, and I live right here.
Okay. To get my bearings, is that 516 behind at the
I
top
live
of the
right,
screen?
Right here, even though it's not directly, it's part of this area, but all of these houses, all of these are Travertine Circle, and then I'm right here.
And in the broader context, Mr. Chairman, this is Highway 17, Ogeechee Road down here.
Coastal Highway.
This is the Kroger at Berwick. This is Berwick Boulevard that goes behind
it. Okay. All right.
The traffic impact, it takes over 10 minutes just to get out of Berwick Boulevard to get onto Coastal Highway. This area here, or sometimes people, when there is an accident at that traffic light, this area that is where the dialysis center is located, many people turn in that area to travel. It is my concern is this is going to, I mean, the impact, the number, I'm not trying to get do away with family homes and that type of thing, but it will have an effect upon this community that's located on Coastal Highway as far as the density and the numbers that are involved. And when you add another story, you have more people also, just as you said. And three stories are not even facing our subdivision. They're facing something else. It looks like vacant land there, whereas the four stories are right in the backyard. We have very little, we're like little, less than patio homes. And many of our people like to sit out and enjoy their afternoon and evening, and they will be looking out over this small area of water that's in between that buffers them.
All right.
And I really don't think the neighbors know what's going on, to be honest. And I didn't get to do a survey, and there's no one here from my HOA. They've had some changes in our structure, which is Century is the management. So this kind of caught everybody off guard. The few people that I talked, and they said, oh, that's down the road on Ogeechee Road. And yes, it is on Ogeechee Road, but it's behind by Cottonvale and behind a car wash and some other businesses along that way.
All right. Does any member of the board have any questions of Ms. Curtis?
So I just hope that you will concur with me that four stories, the variance, reject that.
I would like Mr. Yellen to address some of your concerns in terms of setback. What sort of buffer is between you and your neighborhood?
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity to respond, Mr. Chair. As Ms. Curtis did point out, there is already, in fact, an almost natural buffer between the properties. There is the canal that y'all can see right here, which is the detention pond that services her unit. And then in between, there we go. In between these buildings and the four-story building, we are proposing 174 feet. And we do not intend on pushing this building any closer to the property line. So we have laid this out in a way so as to maximize the buffers and distances between the tallest building and the residential properties. While I know it's not necessarily the purview of this board, I do want to state that when we were at the Metropolitan Planning Commission, traffic did come up. And part of the reason that we did receive unanimous approval from MPC for this rezoning is that the change in use from commercial to residential actually reduced the traffic impact on the neighborhood by about 60%, if I'm recalling correctly, that this site as 11 acres was slated to be big box retail. And going from big box retail to multifamily apartments in this area was a 60% reduction in traffic impact on the neighborhood, particularly because this site, and part of the reason why the developer is so excited about this site, is its proximity to the Kroger, to the Starbucks, to the car wash. There's some economy of scale there where you can have your tenants not really need to drive, not need to get on Ogeechee. If they want to go to Kroger, they can go do their shopping, go out to eat, go to the gym next door without having to take multiple trips. And so we're excited about this project because it does reduce the traffic impact on Ogeechee and on the Burke Plantation area. And it was designed in such a way that does maximize the amount of space between this property and the adjacent subdivision, which is currently shown as 174 feet of distance between the four-story building and then the residential structures. The other issue that I do want to point out in terms of the height of the building, a lot of the height, if there we go, a lot of the height that makes up these buildings is not windows. It's the pitched roof. If you're looking here, the third level ends at 30 feet. We have another 17 feet that's roof line. This isn't people peering into other people's property. It's architectural details and not windows. And so with that, I do appreciate the opportunity to respond and do hope that you approve of this variance request.
All right. I would like to address one point that Ms. Curtis made, and it was her belief that more floors mean more people. I think you indicated that you were maxing out the density per acre here, so there really are no more people that will be.
Correct. The increase in the height did not increase the density of this project. The increase in height increased the green space of this project.
All right. Any questions of board members? I understand that there's a gentleman online, Jay Lee.
Yes, hello.
Mr. Lee?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
All right. Sir, would you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I will.
All right. My name's Mr. Corsi. I am the chairman of this board. You have the floor, sir. What would you like to say?
My first question is regarding the four-story buildings. Is that height measurement to the eave or the pitch of the roofline?
I'm having a little hard.
So for the four-story, the height is to the ridge. Is that
to the ridge?
Yes.
Can we see the four-story plans?
It's on the screen.
I'm seeing a three-story building.
Let me. There we go.
Okay, so the ridge height is 50 and a half. And that is the same as the pitch of the ceiling, I see.
And are you able to see that?
Yes, I am. Thank you. That answers the question. And secondly, will these plans be made public for all attendees of the meeting?
Yes, they're public and they're published online.
Okay, will that be on the Chatham County MPC website?
Yes, sir. They are currently on our website, so you can download them there. If you have any trouble, you can contact staff at the MPC and we'll email them to you.
Okay, that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that all, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Lee from staff or from board members? All right. Yes, ma'am. Step up, Ms. Curtis.
When I was reviewing it, and I may be incorrect, it was saying 24 units per acre. Is that correct?
That is.
And there's 11 acres, so that would be more than the 100 and what did you propose? The 100 as far as residents, as far as the density of the
180
units,
I believe it was.
The current proposal is for 180 units. The 24 units per acre is the maximum that could be permitted. But that there's obviously the site plan constraints that go into it. So you can never really maximize a project because you got to put in the roads and the parking and the stormwater.
So it did say 24 though.
Correct. That's the max under the ordinance.
Thank you. Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions, Ms. Curtis?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of anyone? Any discussion by the board? Hearing none, may I hear a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, as the older members of the board know, I am loath to grant exceptions to the rules. However, we have done it, especially for some unknown reason along this stretch of highway, which apparently has become so full of these apartment projects, which we need because people need places to live. Architecturally, actually, I would rather have the four-story apartment building in back of my property than another Kroger's, that's for sure. So therefore, in view of the recommendation of the staff and the fact that we have three times the least granted variances to the ordinance, plus the fact that the ordinance, in fact, itself is under review, I would move that we approve the granting of the variance.
Do I hear a second to that motion?
Second.
All right. Before I call for a vote, Chairman is persuaded by the fact that the county has been reviewing the height requirements under its zoning ordinances for some time. It appears that it's moving in the direction of raising that height limit. So I am a yes vote. So let me call for a vote. Let me do a roll call vote. Chairman votes yes. Ms. Ross is absent. Ms. Stone's absent. Mr. Vineyard, you are yes. Mr. Palouk?
Yes.
Ms. Field?
Yes.
And Mr. Drayton?
Yes.
Okay. That is a unanimous vote. The variance has passed. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, on that matter.
Thank you.
Going to the second matter on the agenda this morning. It is 431 Shipyard Road, variance request to allow a second dwelling unit on a single family lot. Now, hear from staff, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The petitioner, Travis Sawyer, is requesting a variance to allow a second residential dwelling on a lot where one residential dwelling is permitted. The subject property, I'm going to show you here, is located at 431 Shipyard Road. This is the map that highlights that property. It is a triangular lot. It's approximately 4/10 of an acre, and it is developed with a two-story single-family residence located here where the red dot is, and then a single-story residence located at the rear of the property. The two-story residence, which we're calling for the purposes of this meeting, Building A, is on the same property as the smaller building, which we'll be calling Building B, just to differentiate the two. The issue here is that Building B is a one bedroom, one bathroom, full kitchen and living space, which by definition constitutes a dwelling unit. The zoning ordinance in the county and allows one dwelling unit per single family zoned property. Section 3-3 of the ordinance states in part that there should be no more than one principal dwelling or use upon any lot. And because both structures on this property include full housekeeping facilities, they are each a principal building. I should mention that in the event this were a accessory building, meaning not a full housekeeping facility, it would be permitted. This is an aerial map that shows Building A located here, Building B located in the back. When the property was originally developed, Building B was constructed prior to Building A by a previous owner, and county records indicate that that occurred in 1984. In 2016, Building B sustained hurricane damage and remained in a state of disrepair for several years. The current owner purchased the property as it was and sought to renovate both the interior of Building A and do reconstruction and renovation on Building B as the roof was damaged and the property had been open to the elements for some time. The reconstruction of Building B included replacing the damaged roof and the rear wall, which I'll show you here in just a second, as well as a full renovation of the building as it was. That renovation consisted of a full interior demolition and replacement. This is Building B as it exists today.
This is the renovated building or the original?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The renovated building. This is Building B as it existed during the damage or when the damage was done. A tree fell on the building and the current owner purchased it like this. Let's see. gonna pull this up earlier. Give me 1 second. I got some other documents I need to share. So here are some additional photos of the building as it was before it was repaired. You can see it had been open to the elements for some period of time. This is the renovated building as it exists today. And again, it still includes a one bedroom, a bathroom, a living area, and a kitchen, making it a full dwelling unit. The main house did have a full cosmetic restoration to the interior, but that's not really relevant to what we're discussing today, really is specific to Building B. So the applicant went through the permit process with Chatham County, requested permits to do the work that you've seen in these photographs. That work was completed essentially. And upon request for a certificate of occupancy, the owner was made aware that the county could not issue a CO because the property was non-compliant with the zoning section that I referenced earlier, 3-3, regarding the number of principal buildings on a single lot. The owner was advised at that time that relief from that requirement could be sought through this body to accommodate the building B in terms of being able to be legally occupied going forward. As it relates to the criteria for reviewing a variance specific to extraordinary and subsequent exceptional conditions pertaining to the particular piece of property in terms of its size, shape, or topography, the lot does exhibit unique geometry, but that's not really relevant to what we're considering today. As it relates to a hardship, a staff's review concludes that the application of this section would require that the applicant convert building B from a dwelling to an accessory, from a dwelling to an accessory building. The only way to do that is to remove the kitchen, essentially. So it would become not a full dwelling unit. It would become an accessory building. That would put him in compliance with the ordinance outside of the variance process. The original construction of the building was under a previous owner, and the work performed by the current owner was permitted by Chatham County. And based on that finding, staff finds that removal of the kitchen would be a hardship on the current owner. We do believe that these conditions are specific to this property, and we're unaware of any other conditions such as this in the area. It's a very unique situation. I don't think I've brought a case like this before this board in recent memory. In terms of detriment to the public good or impairing the intent of the ordinance, based on our previously stated findings, we don't believe a variance is likely to be a detriment to the public. The structure has existed essentially as it is since the mid-1980s. The renovation and reconstruction that the current owner did not expand the building footprint of Building B or A. It did not encroach closer to any other property. The exterior essentially is the same as it was. And in our finding, whether or not Building B is used as a residence or as a non-residential dwelling accessory building, does not impact adjacent properties. As I mentioned, the building footprint hasn't changed and the use has not expanded. The applicant sought the proper channels to seek approval for the work that was done on site. And so we find that the proposed variance should be granted based on those previously stated findings. The applicant, Mr. Sawyer, is present, and I'll be happy to answer any questions as well.
Do we have any questions?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Let me circle back. Just relative to correspondence that we've received, I do have an email attached to this agenda from the residents at 262 Shipyard Road opposing the variance. I believe there are also some folks in the audience today that will speak to this as well.
Before we get to Mr. Sawyer, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir.
How did this happen?
Well, I think a number of things in terms of the history of this are related to what occurred, most of which had to do with the original construction on the site. So Building B, based on the information we have, was the first building that was constructed on this property.
Okay.
Later, not much later, but later, Building A was then permitted to be built on this site.
Well,
that's really where things got off track from a permit, a legality standpoint.
That leads to my second question.
Okay.
How did Building A get permitted?
I can't answer that. We looked into that. All we know is that permits were issued for Building A, and that was in 1984. Whoever issued that permit at the time either was unaware of the regulation or missed it in the granting of that permit for Building A.
One of the cardinal rules, as I understand, of these ordinances in R1, and this is an R1 lot.
Yes, sir.
Correct. And you've correctly shown that pertinent part of 3-3.
Mm-hmm.
And to paraphrase it, thou shalt not build two residences
right.
on a single lot. But yet that's precisely what you're asking us to this board to approve this morning. I'm going into this argument and this issue with a little trepidation. I've got to admit. And I don't see anyone here from the county to tell me, at least, how a permit can be issued to build a second residence on a single family lot. And it apparently has happened twice on this same property. If I'm
to clarify that point, the original construction of Building B was permitted, and then Building A came along and got permitted.
Understand that.
Outside of what should have been done. When the applicant came, the current applicant purchased the property, sought permits. He sought permits to renovate Building B, which essentially was a roof replacement and interior reconstruction. And yes, admittedly, as I understand it, they did essentially gut Building B and redo what was there, meaning replace the kitchen, replace the bedroom, replace the bathroom, et cetera, all the floors and everything that, as you can see in some of those photographs, the amount of damage that was present. So I think what probably happened, Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, that is in both cases, the fact that Building B was a residence was not recognized by the permit issuing authority. So from staff standpoint, I think we are looking at this from the standpoint of whether or not the current applicant is has a justifiable reason to have taken the actions that he took. And from what we can tell, he went through the process as a property owner would suspect they need to. And the things that were done permit-wise were not his responsibility.
Okay. Questions? If you would, identify yourselves before you ask your questions, please.
Microphone's on as well.
Yeah, this is Mr. Vineyard, Vice Chairman. Mr. Lawson, does the applicant live in Building A?
No, sir.
So it's rented?
Yeah, there's not anyone residing in either building right now.
In either building?
Correct.
Well, what is the purpose of Building B?
The purpose of Building B?
Yeah, is it going to be a rental unit, and is that permitted under the code to have two rental units on a single family lot?
Well, there's no provisions that prohibit properties from being rented, but I think I'd prefer the applicant to go into his plans, for the buildings.
All right, Before we do that, are there any other questions of staff before we move to the applicant?
Yes. Ben Pelote, board member. So I would imagine that the applicant went through a lot of expense to repair this building, particularly the roof, and what I've seen is the interior. And although he went through those expenses, it would also appear that he also went through the correct channels in order to get permitted. So inevitably, it would appear that the petitioner could potentially be penalized for someone else's mistake, and that, and him being penalized, him or her being penalized for that, and the expense that they went through to renovate this building seems obviously unfair to the applicant. And from what I'm understanding from you, Marcus, is basically we've been put in a position to, in this instance, I would say further a mistake from the county in allowing an application to occur in both these instances, but that still doesn't negate the fact that the petitioner has incurred, I'm going to say, just being in the business, some significant cost to renovate this building, to bring it back up to par, so to speak, and making it a dwelling. So I would definitely be interested to understand the nuances with regard to the purpose of A and B buildings for the future, like what the plans are, before we move forward. Because again, I think it's unfortunate, as the chairman and I kind of had the conversation earlier, the petitioner is in between a rock and a rock, not because of their own accord. So I think we need to keep that in mind.
I agreed, and that was kind of staff's position as well. Looking at the whole history of the situation, going back to the mid-80s is really where the ball sort of got dropped, frankly, from a permitting standpoint. And so the question now is really the options, as I kind of tried to lay out today, is that either the applicant will be able to CO the property through the county if a variance is granted. If a variance is not granted, then in order to CO the property, he'll have to bring building B into compliance, which would mean converting it from a dwelling to an accessory building.
Ms. Field, I understand you have some questions.
Do you know if this property is on city or county sewage or if it's on septic?
I don't. I would suggest we have the applicant answer that when he comes up here in just a minute. That will be a factor because of having multiple dwelling units on a property of this size. So I think that's something he can answer for us.
Any other questions before we get to the applicant? All right, Mr. Sawyer.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Would you raise your right hand? Do you swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
For the record, state your full name, please.
Travis O'Neill Sawyer.
And address, please.
For this property or my personal address?
Personal address, please.
165 Trail Creek Lane, Savannah, Georgia, 31405.
Now, I understand that you are the owner of the subject property under consideration this morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. You have the floor.
All right. So I purchased this property from a friend of mine. They had gone through some hardship. They had had some tenants that lived in the property that they got out of the property, and they were looking to sell the property. I purchased the property and started doing the repairs. We started demoing the property, applied for all the permits, and got all the permits from the proper channels. In fact, I spoke to Mr. Lotson before I even purchased the property, asking if it was okay to restore this carriage house, because we weren't going to be expanding the footprint. We're going to be basically restoring what was there. I do a lot of restoration around the community. I like to remove blight from the community. And this house had sat empty like this for over about 6 years. So I wanted to take this property and restore it. I did. I invested over $200,000 in the restoration of the carriage house and the main house. My intention is to sell the property. And previously, the previous owner had it, and he had his mother-in-law living in it when he originally lived in it. And then they moved out, moved on, and then he started renting the property out. And then a tree that was actually on the property line fell and crushed the structure.
So. When did you buy the property?
I believe I closed on it back in April of 2022.
April 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you bought it because of a hardship of your friend?
Correct.
Now, to your knowledge, what was building number B used for previously before it was damaged?
It was a carriage house. He had his mother-in-law living in it.
Okay. So it was used as a second residence?
Yes, sir. And from the photos you see, they actually had a gas range in it too.
All right. Now, you mentioned the $200,000 figure in relation to the main house. Did that include the restoration of building B, or was that a separate amount of money?
$200,000 was for the entire property to be restored.
Can you give me some indication approximately how much you would have spent on building B?
On building B alone, I spent approximately $150,000. And I actually have the budget here. Well, not the budget, the P&L statement for that property.
Yeah. When you bought the property, did you ever have any intentions of living on the property?
No, sir. I did. As the process was developing, I did consider it, but I was actually in the process of adding onto my house out in Southbridge.
When you went to, and I want to, since I'm not a developer, I'm not a contractor, I'd like to understand the process here a little bit. You have are a developer or contractor of some sort?
I'm not a developer. I have a franchise called Home Investors. We buy houses, and I like to buy and restore houses. This is where I get my creative outlet from, and I like to remove blight from our city and our county because we have a lot of it in this area.
My point there is you have obtained permits from the county previously.
Yes, sir.
Restore houses.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Walk me through the process at Chatham County, please, about obtaining a building permit.
Okay. So to obtain a building permit, I get with my general contractor, and we get with all the subs that we intend on using for the property, and then we go through the property during the process of purchasing it. We identify what is going to be needed for each property because every property is in a different state of disrepair. So once we get into the property, we begin the demo, and that's when we usually apply for the permit, is during the demo process. So
let's focus in on that alone.
Yeah. So we
do go to obtain a permit. Where do you go?
We go down to Eisenhower.
Okay. To the building and safety department or whatever it's called.
Correct. Usually work with Gregory Anderson on that one.
Mr. Anderson. Mm-hmm. Okay. Does Mr. Anderson personally grant these permits, or does he have staff that does that?
He has a staff.
Okay. And when you file an application, do you tell what your intentions are with respect to the work that you intend to perform?
Yes, sir. It's all laid out clearly.
And in this particular case, did you advise the county that building B that you intended to renovate was intended to be a second residence?
I sure did. There are even blueprints provided with it.
All right. And staff nevertheless granted you that permit?
Yes, sir.
Was there any discussion about why they were allowing a second residence to be built on a single family lot?
The question came up if it was a second property, and I had to instruct Mr. Gregory that on the county website, when you click the next arrow for the next structure that's on the property, it showed up there as a dwelling unit, and that's how he agreed that it was already existing.
So are you saying Mr. Gregory was directly involved in granting this permit?
We had a conversation on two occasions, yes.
All right. That's all for me right now. Mr. Vineyard.
I feel for you. This is a mess that we're in the middle of. Now, it's your intent to sell the property, right?
Yes, sir.
But you can't sell the property without a certificate of occupancy, obviously.
Correct. And also because I have very high morals and standards, and I wouldn't want to sell this problem to somebody else.
Yes, somebody else. Okay. Well, one, I congratulate you for fixing this mess up. And you've certainly invested a whole lot of your money and apparently have gone through the steps as required. You understand our problem.
Can I intervene 1 second?
Yes, sir.
We pass every single inspection on the first visit as well. That's mechanical, electrical, plumbing, all phase one and phase two of both of those, framing, insulation, and pre-drywall. We did not get the red flag until we were about ready to call for the CO, and they're like, we have a complaint that this is not within zoning permission. I was like, I've followed every single channel and gotten through this. I even was asking building and even Marcus before I even purchased the property if it would be acceptable.
So all those people were in part B while the bathroom was gone in there, while the kitchen was gone in there, and everything else. Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
I'd like to follow up on one question here. This is Mr. Corsi, the chairman, again, for the record. How long did it take you to renovate this building B?
We began, roughly, we got the permit in June because it took about a month and a half to get the permit. And July, August, September, we completed it in October, and we've been sitting here on idling ever since. Because right. We were supposed to go, we were trying to get in for the October hearing, and then November was canceled, and now we're in December. So I've been holding it finished for 3 months now.
All right. And you indicated that throughout this process, there are approvals that need to be made by the county for rough-in construction, plumbing, electrical, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, sir.
And all of those were made?
They were all made and greenlit.
And no one at any time during the construction of Building B made any indication that this might not be a problem?
That's correct. Oh, and to answer Ms. Field's question earlier, it is on private well, and it's also on a septic tank. When we were doing the rehabilitation of the property, we discovered that the Building B, the carriage house, as I refer to it, was actually tied to the community well, and we disconnected it from it because we couldn't figure out why it was not turning off. So we disconnected from the community well where it was getting free water for all these years. So we made a lot of corrections to this property.
So I agree.
In addition to that, I guess my question is the septic system for that property, because that area is highly regulated for mm-hmm. septic systems and leach fields. And was there ever a question when you were permitting, was that anything ever brought up about the health department and environmental as far as sustaining two residences on one single system?
From what I understand from the previous owner, it was originally built with the main house in mind to be put there, and the septic tank was up to code for all those structures when it was originally put in.
So I understand, maybe I missed something here. There's one septic system for two residences here. Okay. All right. Mr. Pelot, do you have any questions?
No, I'm
okay.
How do you like the before and afters?
Very nice.
And take a lot of pride and use a lot of local contractors too to do all my work.
Who is the GC? Just out of question.
Chuck Tippins with Tippins Homes. He builds primarily $500,000 houses in Effingham, Southbridge, and primarily Savannah Quarters.
Has he built in this area before?
No, he has not.
Okay. Mr. Drayton, do you have any questions, sir?
My only question was, are there any other in the area that also have a second dwelling as well?
As a matter of fact, there are three within 250 feet of this property.
So those dwellings are also not properly zoned.
Marcus, can I show the PowerPoint where we identify those three properties? One is an adjacent property, one is directly across the street, one is about 250 feet away, and it actually has four dwelling units on it. And this is all information that pulls directly from Sages.
All right. If you would have us, well, are you done, Mr. Sawyer?
Oh, I was going to show.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Point I sent you.
Yep. I think I'm good.
There, shipyard. Was that it?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, this one. Yep. So, all right, there's the other three. One is directly next door, due south. One is directly across the street, which has a duplex on the backside that is a disconnected dwelling unit. And then the one to the north, that actually has four dwelling units.
All right.
There's 256 Shipyard. There's 459 Shipyard, which is directly next door. And there's 253 Shipyard that has four.
And I'm assuming that all these adjacent properties that you're showing me are also R1?
They are.
Staff, any response to that?
I think the only thing we can add to this part of the discussion, Mr. Chairman, is that throughout Chatham County, there are examples of structures that have been converted to dwellings, some of which have been done through a permit process, some of which have not been done through a permit process, especially in some of the older parts of the county, a lot of the islands areas. It's not uncommon where you have large lots that at some point a building it becomes a dwelling unit. That's really an enforcement issue. It's difficult to know what's happening inside a building, like what I was describing with building B, whether or not it's actually a dwelling or unless you actually physically go inside the building. And
so your point is we don't know whether these other lots were properly permitted or whether permits were even sought at all.
Correct.
At this point. All right. And who's in charge of the enforcement here?
The Building Safety and Regulatory Services Office is in charge of enforcement as it relates to the zoning ordinances. But I will say that, again, most of that is and really has to be complaint driven because we're not going around inspecting individual properties for what's happening inside the four walls.
Okay. All right. Mr. Sawyer, anything else?
Thank you for your time.
But it's okay. Just have a seat. We may want to hear from you again. I understand that there are people in the audience. I know we have one written opposition. Is that person in the audience today? Okay. Who's here in person? All right. Step up, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Craig Call. I'm here to represent Mr. Blackston and Mrs. Blackston, who live immediately adjacent, which would actually be this property right here.
Mr. Blackston? Okay, very good. All right, Mr. Call, you've got the floor.
There's a lot to unpack here. Honestly, don't really know where to begin, but a couple of things that I heard that I just want to touch upon. Mr. Lotson mentioned that he doesn't recall bringing a petition like this before the board, and that's because it's flat out not allowed. I mean, you can't do it. The ordinance is perfectly clear that you cannot have two residential dwelling structures in a R1 zone. And there was a lot of discussion about expense and time, and you know, respectfully, expense is not a factor in variance. I mean, that's why you seek the variance before you do the work. But, you know, it's not the adjacent neighbor's fault that the proper research wasn't done on the property before they started working on it. And I think Ms. Field had a very telling question. The general contractor who does work in Chatham County should have very well known that was completely improper. That is not allowed. And he did it anyway. Didn't say anything to Mr. Sawyer. And I want to be clear, I do not know Mr. Sawyer, don't have any personal ill will or against him, anything like that. I'm sure the residents and everybody is glad the structure was cleaned up, but it sat that way for a period of time. And also, there was a lot of discussion about the proper channels being followed and permits granted. Now, Mr. Corsi, Chairman Corsi, I know in your experience as a city attorney, same as mine, that there is a term called ultra vires, which means a local government or an agency did something they did not have the authority to do, because they did it without the right, without the power to do it. And that means that nothing was actually granted. That means those permits are invalid, because they were not allowed to be issued in the first place. And there's well-established Georgia case law that says nothing vests with an ultra vires act. He's not granted anything. You can't turn around and sue, you know, a government for doing something they shouldn't have done in the first place. And I want to touch upon the staff report just briefly. The variance standards, the very first one identifies extraordinary and exceptional conditions that should be found before a variance is granted.
Could you cite what section that is, please? Do you have it for you?
It's the staff report, the variance standards in the staff report, which I believe, I think it's 10, under the county ordinances, I think it's 10.6. Did we close the website where I can pull up the document?
Thank you.
I've got it.
Yeah.
It's 10-6.2.
Oh, but go ahead. I'll get this back open.
In my opinion, I mean, there's no finding of any sort of condition, either extraordinary or exceptional. The only thing that's listed is that the shape of the property is somewhat peculiar. And the second standard, which is the unnecessary hardship, it's kind of what we just talked about. Yes, he spent money. And yes, he was granted permits, but because the government did something wrong, doesn't give him anything. There's no hardship to be found there. And to mention about the other properties in the area, and I believe the residents will speak on this, those other additional properties were not, to their knowledge, have never been permitted. People just built them. That doesn't mean it's allowed. And the finding that a additional residential structure on a property as opposed to an accessory building won't create more of an impact, I just don't understand that. If you got two families on one property as opposed to one family with a garage, there's going to be a much different impact. Particularly with traffic, you're going to have more cars coming in and out of there. You're going to have two families trying to store all their stuff on the same property. The impact is obviously going to be greater. I want to pull up. Is there a way to pull up the application?
You're referring to,
yeah.
Just like this, yeah.
Where to open the application, or can y'all see the application?
They can see that.
Yeah, thank you. Here. I want to point out this right here. It says reason for application, variance is checked, and then the first word right under that is rezone. There's a big difference between rezoning and variance. There's things known as use variances and design variances, which is what most of us are familiar with, design variances such as setbacks and building heights, things of that nature. And zoning laws are generally governed by what's called the rule of exclusion. It means if it's not mentioned, then it's not permitted. Chatham County ordinances do not mention or permit use variances. I've got some documents I would like to hand out. And what we just handed out is a excerpt from the Chatham County ordinances discussing variances. Tells you the reasons you can grant a variance, and then specifically says, provided, however, the variance shall not be granted to permit use of land or building or structure that is prohibited by the ordinance in the district in question. Undeniable. That the ordinance prohibits two dwelling structures in a single family lot. On the second page, in addition to that limitation, the last sentence of section 3-3 says single family residential lots shall be limited to one electrical meter. The next page shows you the two separate electrical meters. There's one on building B and one on building A. It is a legal impossibility for the variance to be granted. Chatham County ordinances expressly prohibit it. It plainly states you may not grant a variance if it's prohibited by the ordinance. I don't usually get that lucky. I'm a lawyer, I'm used to losing. But it is in black and white that it cannot be granted. And I also would like to hand out a letter from 1996 where the Chatham County Inspections Department notified the prior owner that you cannot have two residences on this lot. Chatham County knew about it. We've got it right here in black and white again. Chatham County knew that this was not conforming. Mr. Corsi, again, you I'm sure you're very familiar. There are non-compliant properties in every jurisdiction, probably in the state of Georgia. That doesn't make it okay just because they've existed there for a long time. Sometimes a variance is the right way to bring it to compliance, and sometimes it's not. And in this situation, it's our opinion that it is just, this is not the right method, and it's not allowed. It's not permitted. So that's what I have to share with the board. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions. I know there's some resident, Mr. Blackson and Mrs. Blackson are here, and there's at least one other resident who would like to speak. But
before you step down, for the record, I have marked the first exhibit that you've given to me, section 10-6.3, the request for variance, as Blackston Exhibit A. And the second exhibit, the County Inspections Department 1996 letter, is Blackston Exhibit B. These will be introduced in the record, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Call?
Yes, sir. As I understand this letter, and as I understand the sequence of events here, B was built before A. Is that correct, Mr. Lotson?
Yes, sir. It is.
So B is actually the principal residence on this lot, not A. Is that not true?
I don't know.
Because you couldn't have built A. The A was not allowed to be built if B was being used as a residence. And that's your argument, is it not?
In general, yes. I mean,
well, that's not in general. That's what the law is, as you stated it. You could not build A if you already built B.
Well,
and B was there first, permitted and being used as a residence before A was ever built.
Okay, I don't disagree with that timeline, but my argument is you can't use a variance to get around a zoning requirement.
So if
a use zoning requirement.
If we, whatever we do here, I mean, either you're going to have to rip the kitchen out of B, which is actually permitted, legally permitted, because it was the first residence, or you're going to have to tear down A. Now, that looks to me like where we are here, because A is actually the non-conforming use right here. A was never supposed to be built because B had the right permit. B was the single family lot, so it had a single family residence on it. And then somebody built A. Now that's the timeline as I see it.
Well, and my only comment to that would be there was a point in time at which Building B was damaged to the point where it could not be inhabited, and Building A then arguably became the primary residence.
You know,
but I think A was built before B was damaged. Was it not? I mean, B was built first, A was built second, but A was built before B was damaged. Okay, that's all.
And if I can respond to that, what essentially you had when both of those buildings were there is what's called a non-conforming use. And in pretty much every set of ordinances, and probably in the state of Georgia and around the country, non-conforming uses are not permitted to be expanded or rebuilt. And if at any time a non-conforming use goes out of use, which the set Building B would have when it was damaged, and that lasted for 6 months or longer, you no longer have a right to that non-conforming use. In addition, the application clearly references a secondary dwelling unit that's pre-existing, and the application is seeking a variance for the lot, not for the building itself.
This is a hell of a mess, shall we say?
I agree. I wouldn't want to be in either position, to be honest with you.
Do you have any witnesses you'd like to? I'm sorry. Ms. Field?
You may not know, but I'm just curious, when the damage was done to this structure, was it over 50%, meaning that it applies that everything has to be brought back up to code now? There's no exceptions. After so much damage and so much renovation to any home, it's required. Do you know if that came into play with that?
I don't know personally, but I'm looking at the photo. I mean, that, as Mr. Sawyer said, that was a complete rebuild. I mean, there was no saving the structure. It was, I mean, my guess would be it was clearly more than 50% damaged.
Just hold on, Mr. Sawyer. Hold on. Please, no comments from the audience. We'll give you everybody an opportunity.
I obviously was not involved in the restoration. That's just looking at the photo. It appears to be
understood
that way to me.
I'm just on the grounds of trying to verify beyond the fact that it's not allowed for that particular lot of, is everything actually rebuilt to code? Because I still have questions about that being on a septic system and a shared septic system with another structure.
That I can't speak to, but I think it's pretty clear there's two electrical meters on the property and the ordinance flat out says you can't do it.
Well, there's obviously separate utilities completely for that structure.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Call? Is there someone who'd like to, another person like to step up? But Mr. Blackson, come on up. Would you state your name for the record and raise your right hand, please?
Ben H. Blackson, Jr.
Address?
My mailing address is 249B Shipyard Road.
All right. So you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
And I believe you have someone with you.
That's my wife, Tina.
All right. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Tina Blackston.
All right. And your address is?
249B Shipyard Road.
All right. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
And I would ask that we have one person speak at a time, please.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Blackston,
yes,
you have the floor.
Are you right? This is a big mess. It's been a big mess since day one. My wife and I built our house in 1983. Right. And before that, we lived right across the road. We ran Harrison's Fishing Camp on Shipyard Road for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And we built our house in 83. And the construction of House B started during our construction. And the person that owned that, bought that lot and started that construction, he lived right across the road next to the fishing camp. His mom and dad was one of the people that Mr. Sawyer brought up, that built the house in the backyard and built the garage apartment and started renting it out. And his uncle did the same thing. He's one of them too. And they built those places without a permit. They just built them and started renting them. I was running the fishing camp next door. I saw all this happening. So when we bought our lot and started building our house, and the owner started the small house, he got a permit on that small house, not for a primary residence. It was permitted for a storage building. And there's a letter we have. I think you have a copy of that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a primary residence. It was a storage building. And I went straight to, and I told him, I said, I knew the boy, I grew up with him. I said, my wife and I don't want rental property in our backyard. The house is 8 feet from the property line. It's in our backyard. The kitchen and the bathroom and the dining room, that all the windows are right in our backyard, 8 feet from the property line. And of course, he told me it wasn't even going to be any windows on that house, but that wasn't true. It was, and he built the first house, and then he started on the two-story main house. Well, I'm down at the inspection department complaining, trying to file a complaint, and how he got it a permit for to build two residences on one or one lot, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I've been to Mr. Anderson's office dozens of times. I've had Miss Helen Stone, our county commissioner, get involved, and she stopped it from being a rental property majority of the time. But the original owner, he sold the property from the people that Mr. Sawyer bought it from, and he applied for a medical hardship for his mother. And we met with Chatham County Board of Commissioners, and they went against the county ordinance. The county ordinance stated that you can have a medical hardship, but it has to be on a temporary, like a mobile home can be brought in for a medical hardship. And after the medical hardship, the mobile home has to be removed. But they went ahead and approved a medical hardship for that, for House B, you know, while his mother was alive. But pretty much all through the years that we've been able to stop it, but from become, you know, being rented for rental property, because, you know, we don't, you know, we want our privacy. We don't want rental property right 8 feet from the fence in our backyard. When Mr. Sawyer brought the property, and I saw him over there, I went up and introduced myself, and I asked him what his intentions were for the small house. And he told me, he said, we're going to renovate it and turn it back into a residence. And I told him up front, I said, me and my wife, we don't want that. We don't want rental property next to us, and we will fight it. And I went down to Mr. Anderson's again, but he brushes me off. He never did, never wanted to try to help me, and I don't understand why. You know, this is plain and simple. It's all one lot. It's one house per lot. And for some reason, we have two houses on one R1 lot with two electric meters, two gas meters, and I can't tell you why that was approved. But we fought it since 1983, and we still gonna fight it. It's wrong. It's not right.
All right. Any questions of Mr. Blackston from members of the board? All right. Hearing done. Ms. Blackston?
I'm just seconding what he said. Everything he said and told you is exactly the truth. And we have every documentation, every letter, any communication we've ever had with the building permit.
You know, Mr. Anderson, Ms. Stone, it's all in here.
And I feel bad for this young man because, in my opinion, the man he bought it from didn't tell him our history.
I don't suppose that you have copies here today of those documents that you have.
Of everything?
Yes, ma'am.
No, ma'am. No, sir. I don't.
I'd love for those to be entered into the record officially. If we could find a way to do that, could you get those copied today, Mr. Call?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if it's acceptable to the board, I can make sure they're scanned in and emailed to Mr. Lotson before noon. I mean,
as long as we're emailed a copy.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We all of the board needs to receive a copy. And shall we mark those Blackston Aggregate Exhibit C?
I'll do that.
Okay.
Yes. And I'll get with Mr. Lotson to make sure I have everyone's emails and send it to everyone.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Now, there was a gentleman in the back. Sir, come forward, please. Could you state your name for the record?
My name is Eric Tolksdorf. I live at 7 Shipyard Lane. This All is right. the property.
Well, hold on.
Go ahead.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth will help you God?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, sir. You have the floor.
I live at 7 Shipyard Lane, which is a property directly across the street from the property in question. First, I am opposed to this, very much opposed to this. I have with me, and I'll bring this up first, letters, and these are the originals. I have made copies. I have not made copies for everyone. From my neighbors opposing this. So you will find 5 Shipyard Lane, which is the property directly beside me, which belongs to Bill DeLoach and his wife. They each signed a letter there separately. They are opposed to this multifamily residential property or having more than one residence on a single family lot. The next one there you will find from Chuck Moore, Charles Moore at 10 Shipyard Lane. He is adjacent to me. He is my direct neighbor. He is very much opposed to this also. He, in fact, applied for and was denied a request to put a second dwelling on his property so his handicapped daughter can live in it. He was denied that application. And he was required to severance off the property and execute a separate septic tank for his property. So in fact, what is happening here is this property in question is trying to get for free what Chuck Moore had to go through an extremely expensive process to do to get a residence for his daughter on his own on his own property. He complied with it. The building's now under construction. This property here that we're looking at, oh, the other person there is Clyde Sturgis. He is adjacent to Chuck Moore. And if you're looking at the map, you can call him my neighbor, but he lives next to me and he is also opposed to this. So there's four of the residents here besides myself, which you'll see a signed letter in there, and Mr. Blackston, who are all opposed to this. This property, the letter that was sent out to everybody and the request for a variance are not really the same. One is asking for a multifamily variance, which I'm guessing is an R2 or an R3. Granting an R2 or an R3 in this area, we're going to destroy this neighborhood. I don't know how else to put it, but R2, R3 in this area is not it. And we're going to make an R2 out of a half an acre lot, 0.49 of an acres. This is, you do not have enough acreage there for two primary dwellings. I believe the MPC code requires somewhere between 25 and 30,000 square feet per single family lot to get a residence on it. Now you're going to have two. You simply don't have enough real estate there to put two lots on by your ordinance. Next is this building is 8 feet from the property line. This is a dwelling, 8 feet from a property line. I believe the ordinance required that to be some 20, 23 feet away. I'm quite sure we're just not going to pick up this building and move it an additional 15 feet away. Well, first, there's not enough room on this property. Next is parking. What are we doing with parking on this thing? Right now, parking's not an issue. The place isn't rented. Obviously, the owner, Go-Go Developments, not a private person. This is an investment corporation applying for this variance here. This is an investment corporation. This is not a private individual doing this. It's right clear on the application. They are looking for that variance, a corporation. Parking. What are we doing with parking? Right now, there's a driveway on the front of the building that is meant for the house. Building A has been referred to. There is no parking for building B. None. Now, if somebody's going to tell me that, well, we're going to use part of the driveway for building B, that's not going to happen. In real life, that driveway is designed and to be used for building A. Now, where's building B going to park if this is a residence? Over to the right-hand side, the septic tank is there. So we're going to park in the yard on top of a septic tank so people can get to building B. Or are they going to drive around into the backyard? Either case, and in all the nice pictures we see here, I have not seen a plot plan of how we are going to do this and how we're going to do the parking. Nothing there. We have to get a variance by somebody for additional curb cuts to bring in a driveway somewhere. Next, to put two lots on one lot on one lot under R2, you're required to make sure that cars do not back out on the road. You have to turn the cars around and drive out on the road themselves. Now, when we get that much parking on that lot, the 60% rule comes into play. We're now going to have more than 60% of the hardscape out there. And what is this going to look like from the street? Right now, it looks good because we do not have two families living there. And for the 10 years I've been in, or 12 now, I've been at there. Nobody's lived in that back part of the building because, well, it's uninhabitable. I really strongly encourage that we do not allow this. The best solution for, well, Mr. Blackston and other people is simply demolish this building and remove it from the site. It's in non-compliance in so many ways that it's wrong. Now, if you're saying that building B is the compliant building and building A is non-compliant, that's your viewpoint. The metering. Now, somebody's put a second meter on this lot without asking for a variance or compliance. It says you shall not have a second meter. That has been done illegally. That meter has just, it's brand new. It's been put up illegally recently. I mean, through the renovation process. And the question came up, and I apologize for my outburst, but more than 50% of the value of the building, by GoGo Development's own admission, they spent $150,000 on that small building. So somebody's trying to tell me that that little building is worth more than $300,000. Of course, there is more than 50% of the work done. We had the roof was structurally damaged, that it had to be rebuilt, completely stripped, sheathed, new rafters, joists, the back wall, which was re-put back together, and I don't, the building's not wide enough for interior supporting walls, but that wasn't done. What is clear here is the owner, GoGo Developments, did not hire a design professional to look at this. At that point, of the 50% on that small secondary building, the outbuilding, a design professional would have looked at this and going, we have code compliance issues, along with the primary or the building A part. While that was all interior work, the total value, I'm not really too sure where that is, but the electrical meter has to be removed. That includes the rough-in, the weather head, and all the associated wiring with the second electric meter. That has to be removed. Not removing that, there's an encouragement there for future owners or current owners to make this into a residential or into a rental facility illegally. And then now we have a policing problem. Now we have to police this. And as we know, Chatham County doesn't have enough staff to go out and police everything and do all that. It's an encouragement if you leave that meter in place to make that a rental property. This, I am encouraging you to make this and keep this a single family lot, a single family dwelling. Make something or bring this building into compliance to make it a single family dwelling.
Sir, before you leave, I was noting your signature on one of these letters. Would you mind spelling your last name? It's a little bit unusual.
Certainly. First name is Eric. It's unusual also. Eric, E-R-I-C-H. Last name, Tolksdorf, T-O-L-K-S-D-O-R-F.
Thank you, sir. You got anything else, sir?
No, that is it.
All right. Questions from any member of the board? Anyone? Okay, may I have those? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone present here today or on the telephone which would like to speak in opposition? Hearing none. Rebuttal by Mr. Sawyer. I think you had something you needed to say.
So the majority of the structure was not rebuilt. There was a section of roof that was about 12 feet by 20 feet that was rebuilt, and then we had to rebuild that. We did have to spend the majority of the money in the process of demoing the property and discovering, you know, removing the mold, doing the remediation, replacing the floor in the kitchen. The kitchen alone cost about $40,000. It is a solid wood kitchen, soft close, quartz countertops, stainless steel appliances, and tile backsplash. We had to do this separate electric meter. Originally, we planned on doing a panel from the main house to the carriage house. But unfortunately, we weren't able to do that because the county required it to have its own separate meter, and so did Georgia Power. So we had to do that to bring that to code for the structure. I've definitely had a hardship with this property. And I will honestly say, from Mr. Blackstone's property, looking at this one, there is a grove of trees and a shed, so it cannot even look into the back of his property. And if it would make him happy, I'd be happy to even build a fence there so you have your privacy. I have no problem doing that, sir. I've been completely honest with you and upfront the entire time of this process. And had you had such issues with the property being rebuilt, I'm sure Mr. Warren would have sold it to you as well. But he came to me asking me to buy it. I don't have any intentions of renting it. I want to sell it. I'd love to, for someone to buy it who has a need for like a son that's in college or a daughter that's in college or an ailing grandmother or grandfather to actually buy and live in the property. And that's all I really have. I've spent a lot of time, energy, and money on this property. I've restored the community with being this property up to code and up to complete code as approved by the county and required by the county. I don't know what else I can do to make the community happy about it, but I'm sorry that y'all are very upset that I restored the structure. That's all.
Okay. Mr. Lotson, may I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Please. Referring to the original permit that was issued for Building B, is there any reason in staff's mind that you can relate that that permit was appropriate in any way and in accord with Chatham County regulations?
Are you referring, Mr. Chairman, to the original permit for the construction or for Mr. Sawyer's permit?
Mr. Sawyer's permit.
Okay. And your question is whether or not staff has an opinion as to the validity of that permit?
Yes.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, there's clearly a number of outstanding issues with the issuance of the permit. I mean, I think going back to the beginning, there were issues with permit issuances. At some point during the process of Mr. Sawyer's permit, had the county found that the second dwelling unit was an issue, I think that should have been addressed on the front end, mm-hmm. not after the work was essentially completed and inspections had taken place. So yes, I think there's an issue with that. From our standpoint, we've kind of moved beyond that in terms of where we are now with the work that's been completed. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that what we looked at this is essentially a renovation of what was already there. If this had been a new construction, I think none of this would have ever happened. The county would have never issued a permit for it. They would have told any applicant, you can't build a second house if it had been a vacant lot and somebody came in with a request to build two residences, they would have just said no. I think there has been some confusion because this property existed before. I think that probably extends to this issue about meters. I think when you start replacing things, and then there's some gray area as to what should be allowed. versus you're building new, everybody's looking at the codes and ordinances as a new construction. It's a little easier on staff at that point to say yes or no. When you're replacing something that existed already, I think there's more of a gray area.
Okay. Next question. In the process from the beginning of the permit to the consideration of granting a certificate of occupancy, what department grants a certificate of occupancy? Is it the same as the one that grants the original permit?
Yes, it is.
Okay. No further questions.
Thank you.
Any questions of staff or of staff from the board? Okay. So, I'm sorry. Mr. Sawyer, would you like another comment?
I would just remember too, Building B originally also had a separate electrical meter as well. We basically replaced what was there, even though we wanted to do a panel. It had its own pre-existing electrical box and panel and meter.
Sir, and I assume that every single person who made an inspection on this property had to walk past building A.
Yes, sir. You couldn't miss the behemoth in the room.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Now comes the time where the board discusses this, but let me start out any discussion for myself. And let me make very clear for everybody, I'm not speaking for the board here, I'm speaking for me. Because of the facts of this situation, this board has been put in an untenable situation. Mr. Sawyer buys a property, seemingly does everything by the book, goes to building and safety, obtains his permit, and then spends his hard-earned money acting in reliance of that permit. Then he goes at the end of the day, after all of his periodic inspections have been completed, presumably positively, he goes to the same department and asks for a certificate of occupancy and is then denied. Mr. Call was correct in his assessment of Georgia law. And for those of members of the board who are not attorneys, let me, if I may, just generally paraphrase what the law in Georgia is when it comes to obtaining permits. Once a permit is issued to a homeowner, it vests that owner with certain constitutional rights. That property is his. He has the right to do with it what he wants to do with it, provided it is in accordance with applicable law, which in this case are the county ordinances. The one major exception is if that permit is issued, in Mr. Call's words, in an ultra vires manner, meaning outside the constructs of law. And I, for one, have a hard time understanding how this occurred. And I've been desperately looking for some crease to try to step into, but I haven't found one. what staff is asking us to do here is be Solomon. How do I split this baby? What are we supposed to do? The petitioner seemingly has done everything right, and the county has done, right up until the CO, done anything wrong. When that permit was issued, again, he had a vested right, but we have to determine whether or not that permit was issued illegally or improperly or not. This man is being harmed by a lot of money that he spent on this property. I am still not clear on how the permit was issued in the first case, because we don't have any evidence from the county on that point. We also don't have any evidence of what oversight there was or wasn't to allow this permit in the first instance. Was it intentional? Was it negligence? I don't know, and I can't make that call, but what I'm being asked to do with my vote is to ignore what I term and believe to be clear law. It's thou shalt not build a second residence on a single family lot. And, you know, having been a 40-year practitioner, and I've got other lawyers on the board, you know, I'm sworn to uphold the law. So I have to say at this point that my vote would have to be to deny a variance. Now, I'm subject to being persuaded otherwise by any member of the board.
Mr. Chairman, I have 10 years on you.
Okay.
I've been at the bar for 50 years and then sat on not this board, which I've only been on this board for a couple of years, but on the Board of Zoning Appeals in the county from which I moved for almost 20 years. Also served as county attorney and attorney for the Board of Sewer and Water. So I know the drill. I think, as I understand the timeline here, Building A, Building B was built first for whatever reason. At some point, then after, and we don't really know the timeline for that, how many years, Building A was constructed and actually lived in. At some point thereafter, Building B was turned into a residence because it was used as a mother-in-law suite, basically. And so that it had a kitchen and it had a bathroom and it had a closet and a bedroom and all those things that other residences have. Then thereafter, of course, we had the storm. And the storm wrecks Building B, which was probably the only correctly permitted residence or building on the lot. And this gentleman, through no fault of his own, buys this piece of work, this problem, and invests not a little bit of money on it, on both A and B. Now, if I lived back there, I would be just as concerned as these residents are. And I do not at all minimize their concern. I live in a gated community, and thou shalt not put another secondary residents on there by hell or high water, except they'd have to go through the homeowners association, which would never allow it. This apparently doesn't have that safety net. I was concerned that actually the petitioner, the applicant, was going to use this as rental property, that is, rent Building A and then rent Building B. That's not what he's going to do. Mr. Corsi, I, like you, swore an oath of allegiance to the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the laws thereof, and in the federal bar to the Constitution of the United States and the laws thereof. And I take my oaths extremely seriously in terms of applying the law. But every once in a while, you know, the facts, as I did when I was a prosecutor, outweigh the law. You know, the law looks like the person's guilty and probably is, but when the facts come out at the trial, somehow the jury or the judge determines otherwise. I have been through hundreds, if not thousands, of those types of things. And this is a very, very difficult situation. I am normally prone to follow the rules as they are, but we grant exceptions left and right. And I don't like the idea of doing it. I am a firm believer that exceptions create a precedent which is difficult to deal with in the future, because once you grant one exception, you have to grant, as in the past one we just had, we wind up doing the same thing because the person here says, well, you just granted three right down the road. I really don't know what to do. And I am, it is a very, very difficult situation for me to be put in. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion, comments from members of the board? This is why we get paid the big bucks.
Yeah. Not even mileage.
Zero. Mr. Lawson, do you have a comment?
I just wanted to circle back a little bit for the record, since the board is, I think, ended the discussion of what the petitioner is requesting, just so everybody's familiar with that. So the ordinance section that we referred to is section 3-3, which essentially says in part that there shall be no more than one principal building or use upon a lot. So in this case, we showed that the two buildings that are on this lot are both principal buildings by definition, because of the fact that they have a living area, a kitchen, and a restaurant. With that said, I would also like to add that I think there's some nuance in the fact that at the point in which Building B became a residence, then that section was violated. When two principal buildings started existing on this lot. So I guess what I would suggest to the board is that I think what we're determining today is, does your action today do anything about that? Because this building exists. It existed as a residence prior to the damage and the repairs that Mr. Sawyer did. So even if Mr. Sawyer is denied, or if Mr. Sawyer is denied, he'll have two choices, as Mr. Vineyard pointed out, to address the issue. One would be to decommission probably Building B, or for the building not to be used. The building will be there regardless. So those are his choices based on what the board rules today, if there is a final ruling today. I would like to also, just for the record, put out there that both the board has the option to continue the hearing if there's other evidence that they feel needs to be provided. Mr. Sawyer has the option to request that of the board. But I just wanted to put all that out there since we were done with discussion and moving toward a motion. Thank you.
All right. Is there such a request? I haven't heard one from this board at this point. There will be some additional evidence presented by Mr. Blackstone and the other gentleman, which will come in after the fact, that we haven't had an opportunity to review yet. Now, does anyone consider that to be a problem in calling this to a vote today?
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Vineyard. I'm not at all sure that what is to be presented is going to change the facts or the law. Actually, the law is the law, and the facts we have heard, I think, a full and complete statement of what has happened here. And I really do believe from in the bottom of my heart that this situation evolved through absolutely no fault of the applicant.
Agreed.
And therefore, so we have something on the table, I will move that this board grant the variance as requested by the applicant and as recommended by staff.
Mr. Pallott makes that second. All right, let's have a roll call vote on that motion. Mr. Vineyard?
Yes. Aye.
Mr. Pallott? Aye. Ms. Field? Nay. Mr. Drayton? Aye. Chair votes nay. The variance passes. Now, for the record, the chair asks that, I'm assuming there's audio recording. Can we make a verbatim transcript of these proceedings this morning? I've got a feeling that this is going up to the Superior Court. And I would prefer that we have a full and complete record to present to that court. Can I request that?
Yes, sir. And just for also for the record, for any one present or listening, as the chairman mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, the zoning board is a quasi-judicial body. Appeals to that body are made to Superior Court. Those appeals have to be filed within 30 days of the decision made here today.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Call.
And I just want to once again clarify for the record that we will be allowed to supplement our exhibits with
yes.
the letters we referred to earlier.
Yes, to complete the record, documentary evidence will be presented that will be entered into the record.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and you have 30 days, and procedurally, that appeal is made in what manner? At the court, okay, directly to the court. You don't have to file anything with the MPC or any, correct, okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Call. Anything else this morning?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I would like to thank everyone who appeared today. Mr. Call, your clients, sir, gentlemen. This is a very difficult situation that the board has been put in, but at least we did this like the gentlemen and ladies that we are, and handled this situation as best we can. Sometimes we do it right and sometimes we do it wrong. And thank God there is a procedure to tell us whether or not we did it right or wrong. And sir, that's your option. And I've been that in many, many cases. I thought I was right or wrong and did exactly the same. But I just wanted to add that, that it's so wonderful in this country that we can get together and to solve issues without acting badly towards each other. So thank you all and Merry Christmas.
Well, we have other business before we're done.
Yes, sir.
Item 10 says 2023 nomination of officers. I didn't notice that before.
So because we did not have a meeting in last month, we typically would do the nomination in November, vote in December. We didn't have a meeting last month, so that's kind of where we're left. But the board does have the option to postpone that nomination if they choose to, because we don't have a full board today, or to make nominations today and vote in January, or to do it today. It's the board's.
I would prefer that we wait until we have a full board.
Certainly can do that. We did that with the city board earlier this week.
Can we table that issue until next month?
Yep.
All right. Any other business today? Hearing none, we are adjourned.